A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello folks, this episode is sponsored by iTalki, a very convenient way to build your fluency in English by getting regular spoken practice into your life with one-to-one lessons or conversations on Skype. They have lots of teachers just waiting to talk to you, and you could talk about anything you want. You could have structured lessons or just conversations. You could talk all about Star Wars, The Last Jedi, if that's your cup of tea. And remember that when you get some lessons or talking time, iTalki will then send you a voucher worth a free lesson. To get that offer, go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, folks. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. This is episode number 503, and this one is all about Star Wars, The Last Jedi. And some of this stuff that I'm saying here is scripted, and some parts are not, but a lot of it is scripted. And if you'd like to read along with me while I'm talking, which can be a great way to work on your English, because you can see specific phrases I'm using and so on. If you want to read along with me, then check out the page for this episode on my website, okay? Now, in fact, there will be two episodes about Star Wars. This one, which is just me talking about the film, going through the plot, giving my thoughts, and discussing the audience reactions to the film. And also the next one, which will be a conversation about the film with my brother and my dad. And we went to see the film together while they were here at Christmas time. And afterwards, I managed to record a conversation with them, and you can hear their reactions and some general rambling about it. And that will be in the next episode. So at least two episodes about Star Wars. I was wondering if I should devote so much time to this, especially considering that some of you probably aren't into Star Wars at all. And then I thought to myself, well, how do I choose my topics for this podcast when I know that I can't please everyone? Often the deciding factor is, do I want to talk about it myself? And also, would I want to listen to it? And the answer to those questions is yes. When I came out of the cinema in December, having just seen this film, I just wanted to hear other people's comments about it. And I looked for podcasts about it and YouTube videos and stuff. And if I was learning English, I would definitely like to hear someone talking about this film in English, in clear English, maybe with a transcript. Certainly my ideal learning French podcast would involve someone discussing this film in some depth in clear French. And I'm still yet to find this elusive, perfect French version of Luke's English Podcast. But anyway, I'd like to talk about it. And I thought, if I was learning a language, I'd like to listen to someone talking about it too. And you know what? I just really want to talk about Star Wars for a while, just because it pleases me to do it. So there you go. That's my justification for doing these episodes. Spoilers. There are spoilers for the film throughout this episode. So if you haven't seen The Last Jedi yet, you might want to wait until you listen. You might want to wait before you listen to this, if you haven't seen it. I'm pretty sure the film has been out for a while in most places. I understand that The Last Jedi came out in China on the 5th of January, a little bit later than in other countries. But I think there's been enough time now for me to do some spoilers on the podcast. If you're not a fan of Star Wars, which is totally fine, of course, I understand that this might not be for you. I don't expect everyone to be into Star Wars. It's just something that I've always enjoyed since childhood. So if you're just not a Star Wars fan, then I totally understand. But you'll just have to put up with an episode or two about Star Wars this time. Or you can just skip them, of course. You could just skip them completely. It's totally up to you. If you want to listen to something else from me, like perhaps an episode about vocabulary or an episode with various jokes and their explanations, or an episode with a mystery adventure story, or an episode with grammar and pronunciation questions answered, let me remind you that you can download the Luke's English Podcast app completely free. And there you'll find at least seven exclusive app-only episodes that deal with those things specifically. And you can just check out the App Store, download the Luke's English Podcast app, check out the app-only episodes category, and away you go. And of course, you have the entire episode archive there, which you can peruse at your leisure if you'd rather listen to something else. But for this one and the next one, it's all about Star Wars. And if you are a fan, I hope that you will enjoy being immersed in the world of Star Wars The Last Jedi for a couple of episodes of this podcast. Let me say again very clearly that there will be spoilers coming, as I'm going to talk about exactly what happens in The Last Jedi in quite a lot of detail. Please don't let me spoil this film for you. Even if you're keen to listen to this new episode, I strongly recommend that you wait until you have seen the film first, okay? So, now, perhaps the people I have left with me listening to this now are fans of Star Wars who've already seen the film, and maybe some other Lepsters who might not be big fans of Star Wars but are just happy to listen to me talking about it, even if it includes a few plot spoilers. I should also say that I might lose some more of you when I say that I really liked Star Wars The Last Jedi. Not everything, but on the whole, I really enjoyed the film, and I feel like the good things definitely outweigh the bad things. I've seen it twice now, and so there's always a chance that I might change my opinion after seeing it a third time, but I don't think so. So I said that I might lose some more of you when I say that I enjoyed this film, and that's because the response to this film has been very divided. Plenty of people like The Last Jedi a lot, but having said that, plenty of people dislike it and even hate this film as well. This reaction, this sort of hateful reaction, mainly comes from so-called hardcore fans online, I think, who are posting very negative reviews on YouTube, as well as on film review websites like IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes. So it seems that the real hatred comes from, you know, just certain hardcore fans. But I'm quite a hardcore fan of Star Wars, and I loved it. So I don't think it's the case that all fans dislike it. I'm a big fan and I loved it. In terms of my fandom, here is a summary. Okay, here's a summary of my fandom. Yeah, that's right. Being a fan is called fandom. Yep. So here's a summary of my fandom. So I grew up with the films. I watched the original trilogy over and over and over again throughout my life. I watched episode 6, Return of the Jedi, in the cinema. As a teenager, I used to have lots of fun speculating about the backstory of certain characters and all that stuff. As a child, I used to think I was Luke Skywalker, as I've said in previous episodes. I was quite obsessive about it growing up. I had all the toys and all that stuff. In the 90s and the 2000s, I saw the prequel films and I was disappointed by them. I found them to be badly written and directed, with pretty bland characters and too much CGI, all that green screen stuff they did. Not everything was bad about the prequels. I liked the Darth Maul scenes, the pod race, the scenes between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Jango Fett. But that, I think that's probably it. I found the rest of it to be more like a Saturday morning cartoon in places. More recently, I saw reviews of the prequel trilogy on YouTube that cemented my opinion of those films as being rubbish. And I'm talking about the fairly well-known YouTube reviews called Mr. Plinkett's Reviews by Red Letter Media. I thought they were very astute criticisms of the prequels with some twisted humour thrown in. So I'm not a fan of the prequels. I mean, you know, a lot of people do like the prequels. I think on balance, most people don't like them, but there are people out there who do like them, and that's fine. You know, it's a question of taste at the end of the day. I don't like the prequels, but I wouldn't go so far as to say that the prequel trilogy ruined my childhood, as some fans have said, and are also now saying about The Last Jedi. I think if your childhood can be ruined by a fantasy film that you watch as an adult, then perhaps your childhood was already quite flimsy in the first place. Flimsy meaning not very well put together or sort of structurally a bit weak. I mean, it sounds like hyperbole to me if you say that watching a Star Wars film ruined your childhood. That just sounds like exaggeration for effect, don't you think? It's being a bit over the top. I think what this phrase, "it ruined my childhood," really means is that the films spoil the Star Wars franchise for you, and that was such a key part of your upbringing, so they kind of taint the nice experiences you had with Star Wars as a child. Anyway, the prequels didn't ruin my childhood, but they did disappoint me a bit, I have to say. Then it was announced that more Star Wars movies would be released after Lucasfilm was taken over by Disney. And then 2 years ago, The Force Awakens, Episode 7, was released. And I really enjoyed it, even if it was very derivative of the original Star Wars film. It basically copied the plot of Episode 4 in so many ways. But you know what? I'm all right with that. I don't really care. I thought it was done in a way that was far closer to the original spirit and aesthetic of the original trilogy. And that was very pleasing. Also, they introduced a few new characters, and that was also interesting too. So also, then in 2015, another Star Wars film came out. That was Rogue One. Was it 2015? Christmas 2015.
Hello, this is me just fact-checking myself. It wasn't Christmas 2015. It was actually Christmas 2016.
And Rogue One was released, and that was a film set just before Episode 4. A bit of backstory, essentially. This was a sort of war movie-inspired episode that didn't have any Jedi or lightsabers in it, but it told the story of how the rebels managed to get the plans to destroy the Death Star. I really enjoyed that too. And now after having seen Episode 7 and Rogue One, it felt like, and it feels like, Star Wars is kind of good again. It's kind of back to its original spirit, from my point of view. I did a number of podcasts about the new Star Wars films. I did one or two after watching Episode 7, The Force Awakens, with James. We talked about it. I also did an episode about Rogue One, also with James, where we just talked about our opinions and thoughts about those two films. I love reading about fan theories and speculations on forums, like, for example, Star Wars Leaks on Reddit. And I also do watch lots of dumb YouTube speculation videos about Star Wars. And there were a lot of those fan speculation videos released onto YouTube in the months before The Last Jedi came out. But I like to think that I have my fandom under control. I love the world of Star Wars, and I feel invested in the stories in the same way that many people feel very invested in those stories. But I try not to expect too much from the films. I remember the prequel trilogy and my experience with watching the prequels in the cinema. I used to get my hopes up really high before each film was released. You know, I used to think, oh, a new Star Wars film, I can't wait. And I'd get all excited and sort of start building it up in my mind, you know, expecting too much. And then I was disappointed each time. Also, I know that one's enjoyment of these films is largely a question of taste and a question of subjective experience. What makes a bad film for some people makes a good film for others. And for those of you who are more the kinds of people who tend to prefer the prequels, in some cases, tend not to prefer the sequel trilogy. That's the new ones. So anyway, it's, you know, swings and roundabouts. The relationship between the fans of Star Wars and the films is very complicated. A lot of people feel very personally invested in this franchise. The fans feel that they own the franchise, or that it represents their own personal life, childhood, dreams, imagination, and everything. It's not often that you get that with films. Star Wars is the film franchise that everyone feels they're part of. Often because we had the toys when we were kids, because Star Wars is quite unique in that way, that it's not just a series of films. It's also this wider universe, and that includes all these other things like toys and stuff, and books and comics and other things, but especially the toys for the original trilogy. So many of us grew up playing with the Star Wars toys and essentially sort of making our own Star Wars films with our toys. So many of us feel very invested in the franchise, and we feel that, you know, we own it, or that it's so close to us. It's strange how Star Wars can do that. When it's at its best, it manages to touch people in the most personal and profound ways. Also, the level of speculation and theorizing among the fans has created such massive expectation from the films that it's almost impossible to please everyone now. And when a film fails to meet people's specific vision for the story and characters, it can feel like a very personal disappointment. But I think some fans are expecting too much from Star Wars now. They've put it on a pedestal. If you put something on a pedestal, that's a way of saying that you put something on a platform as if it's perfect. And you expect it to be perfect and to live up to your highest expectations all the time. But it's just a movie franchise, and to an extent, it's a children's movie franchise too, to an extent. I think that some people honestly just need to chill out a bit and just stop expecting so much from these films. But saying that, there is bound to be someone out there listening to me who disagrees, who says I'm being an apologist, who says I'm just apologizing for these new films, someone who says that there's no excuse for what they've done. And, well, you know, again, I'll go back to just saying it's about subjective experience. And that's that, isn't it, really? And if you didn't like it, then fair enough. In fact, if you didn't like it, which is extremely possible considering the number of negative comments I've seen about the film online, if you're one of those people who didn't like it, then, you know, I invite you to write your comments in the comments section, because I'd love to read your opinion developed in some way, okay? So that's fine. I don't expect everyone to like it. I'm not trying to convince everyone that they should be liking it. I'm just giving you my own personal take on things. When I read some of the negative reactions, I do honestly think, did we see the same film? Some people are so angry. You see some of the YouTube videos, like the thumbnails for the review videos, of like people looking so angry and upset. And it makes me wonder if perhaps there are other things going on here, perhaps, like that maybe these people aren't just angry with the film on its own, but they're angry with what they see as a certain political agenda being expressed through the film. Maybe there's a bit of politics coming into it. This probably feeds into the ongoing saga of the war between, I don't know how to describe them, maybe right-wing people who don't actually say they're right-wing. I don't know. And so there's those people, and then the people that they describe as like liberal social justice warriors, this kind of battle on the internet, which I never actually see in the normal world except online. It's only when I see like angry arguments about, you know, social justice warriors and liberals and all this stuff. And then in my normal life, I never encounter these opinions. So maybe this is just something that goes on online. I don't know. But anyway, the angry ones, whatever their political position, get furious when there's a suggestion that a film is being used to promote feminism or to promote ethnic diversity or perhaps other issues like animal welfare or environmental issues. So, you know, some people get very angry when a film appears to be promoting these things. And even a hint of this in a film makes some people really, really angry and mad. And there is a bit of this in The Last Jedi. There are some strong female characters. There are Black, Asian and Hispanic actors in prominent roles. There's a storyline about animal cruelty. And maybe part of the hatred aimed at Star Wars here is fueled by people's reactions to these sort of political things. I don't know. I don't really understand it. I'm just trying to understand the passionate response. But I suppose, you know, it's just like what I just said. You know, people feel very invested in these films. And when the films don't quite go the way that they expected, then they can get very upset about it. Prominent. I'm just writing the word prominent there. Prominent roles. But also, some people just don't like it because they think it's bad storytelling. It's not just about politics, of course. some people just think that the film is just bad. You know, it's just bad storytelling. And because of the way some characters are dealt with, particularly Luke Skywalker, a lot of people can't stand the way that he's represented in the film. And in fact, they some of these people are kind of using Mark Hamill as evidence that, well, they're using Mark Hamill to kind of back up their opinions, because Mark Hamill, the actor who plays Luke Skywalker, was quite outspoken about, well, he was quite kind of open about his response to the way the film dealt with his character, Luke Skywalker, because Mark Hamill has obviously sort of been associated with the role of Luke Skywalker for many years. And I think he's probably very possessive of the character and very proud of the character, and he's got strong feelings towards the character, and he has his own version of Luke Skywalker in his head. And he said that this film didn't really match you know, his vision for Luke Skywalker, and he was quite open about that. But I think the thing is that many of the haters, let's call them, have been quoting Mark Hamill and sort of using them as their figurehead for the hatred and stuff, and that saying that he's the one who's really telling the truth. But they don't really fully quote him, because his full statement is, you know, I read the script and I was shocked by what they've done with the character, and I was surprised, and I didn't feel like it was my vision. But then, it's not my film. This is Rian Johnson's film. And having seen the entire film completed, I now understand what Rian Johnson was doing, and I respect what he's done, and I like the film. So, you know, Mark Hamill is not 100% against this film. He's just was describing his own personal experience of being shocked by the direction that they gave Luke Skywalker, but that ultimately he thought it was the right thing to do, and that he likes the film ultimately. Okay. And you know, honestly, if you look at the interviews and you see the way that he's talking about it, it's not just a simple case of him hating the films. Okay. He's just describing his complex arc that he went through between being surprised to ultimately realizing that the film, you know, it's good, and that it's a good piece of storytelling, and that he likes what they did with the character. I mean, you know, again, some people are going to say that Disney just sort of told him to say that, but now we're in the realm of conspiracy theory thinking, I suppose. I think another reason why people may be taking against the film to an extent is that there's the association with Disney, and there's a certain kind of anti-corporate feeling amongst the fan base, and they feel like Disney are just this big corporation, and they only care about making money and that sort of thing. And, you know, there's probably a certain element of truth in that. But I think it's possible for Disney to care about their franchise and, you know, use it as a money-making tool while also attempting to make a genuinely good film as far as they see it, you know? I don't think that the two things are mutually exclusive. It's possible to have a good film that also makes money, you know, rather than just a piece of trash that's just a merchandising tool. I think it's not as simple as that. Added to that, there's the humour as well. Some people have really taken against the moments of humour in the film, which they don't think fit in with the tone of the film as a whole, or the whole franchise in general. And there are these moments of humour in there. I enjoyed them myself. I found them funny and pretty weird in some cases, which I enjoyed. But other people just feel like the humour is jarring. Yeah, jarring. Not Jar Jar Binksing, but just jarring. Like, jarring means it kind of suddenly brings you out of the film, or puts you off, or drastically changes the tone in a bad way. Like, jarring. A bit like, I don't know, if you're driving along in a car and you go over a bump and poof, you know, it sort of knocks your spine out of place. It's jarring. Anyway, so I'm talking there about some reasons why the film is disliked by some people, but not everyone, of course. Plenty of people like or love this film too, although it's hard to tell what the overall audience reaction has been. I think it's fair to say that the film is dividing people, particularly the more serious fans. I don't know what you thought of The Last Jedi. There are some pretty strong feelings out there, as I've said. You might disagree with me when I say that I like it, but I hope that you hear me out on this as I go through this episode. Of course, the film is not 100% perfect or anything, and I think there are some issues with it. But generally, I think that there is a great deal to be enjoyed about this, and that if you do love the Star Wars universe, that, you know, it's not all over. Star Wars isn't dead. You can still enjoy it. It's just a little bit different now to how it was before. Okay? All right. So I'd like to now go through the film from start to finish and describe what happens and give my thoughts on each part. This is probably going to take bloody ages because the film is about 2.5 hours long. So God knows how long this episode is going to be. We'll see. Anyway, it doesn't matter. This is Luke's English Podcast. I can do whatever I want. That's why it's called Luke's English Podcast. So The Force Awakens, that was episode 7. You remember the numbers, don't you? So there's the original trilogy. That's episode 4, 5, and 6. A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. And then there's the prequel trilogy. That's episodes 1, 2, and 3. The Phantom Menace. What's the other one? Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. And then there's the sequel trilogy, and that is episodes 7 and 8, and it will be episode 9 as well. Episode 7, The Force Awakens, and episode 8, The Last Jedi. All right. Also, there's Rogue One, and that fits in just before episode 4, even though it was released last year or a year ago. So it goes 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 7, 3.5, 8, and then 9. And we're going to get a Han Solo film next year as well. No idea if that's going to be any good. It looks like it might not be good just because the way that the production has been really problematic. But anyway, we'll wait and see. Okay, so The Force Awakens. A very quick summary of The Force Awakens. So the Resistance, not the Rebellion anymore, it's called the Resistance. They're searching for Luke Skywalker. The Resistance is led by Princess Leia, now General Leia Organa. They're searching for Luke Skywalker because they need his help. And there is a missing piece of a map hidden inside the droid BB-8. And a scavenger girl called Rey finds the droid and ends up being sort of caught up in the story. Luke has gone missing because Han Solo and Princess Leia had a son who turned to the dark side. And the son, whose name was Ben Solo, who's now Kylo Ren, he turned to the dark side while Luke was attempting to train him as part of his new Jedi Academy. And Ben Solo turned to the dark side, perhaps because he was corrupted by this mysterious sort of dark side user called Snoke, who is the supreme leader of the First Order, which is like the kind of the new version of the Empire. Okay, so Rey finds this droid that happens to have part of a map to Luke Skywalker in it. Also, there's another character called Finn, and he's basically a traitor from the First Order. He decides to leave the First Order. He's a stormtrooper who decides to leave because he sort of wakes up and realizes that they're the bad guys, basically. So he escapes the First Order, rescuing a Resistance pilot called Poe Dameron in the process. And Finn and Poe crash land on this planet called Jakku, which is where Rey lives. Poe Dameron manages to escape somehow. We don't know how. And then Finn ends up sort of meeting up with Rey, and they make friends. And the two of them manage to escape the planet, run away from the First Order, who are chasing after both Finn and the droid BB-8 to get the piece of the map. And then Finn and Rey hook up with Han Solo by coincidence. And what else happens? Oh, yeah, then they find a way of blowing up the Death Star. It's not the Death Star, though. It's called Starkiller Base. And they kind of battle with the First Order, and Kylo Ren kills Han Solo, his own father, as part of his sort of training to finally become fully trained in the dark side. This is what Snoke tells him to do. He kills his father, which is a tragic moment. And then Kylo Ren meets Rey and Finn in the forest, and they have a kind of a fight, and it turns out that Rey is strong with the Force, and that's pretty much the end of the film. Okay, in fact, the film ends with them putting the map together, finding the location of Luke Skywalker, and Rey comes with Luke Skywalker's old lightsaber, this lightsaber that used to belong to Anakin Skywalker, and we see in the prequel trilogies that lightsaber has done lots of things, some of them heroic, some of them horrible. And it's a lightsaber that was handed down to Luke Skywalker via Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's it. When Luke Skywalker had his hand chopped off in Empire Strikes Back, that lightsaber was lost along with Luke's hand. But somehow it's been found and it ends up in Rey's hands. And she then comes back to give the lightsaber to Luke Skywalker in a sort of symbolic gesture of like, here's your lightsaber back. Now, come on, join the resistance. We need the legendary Luke Skywalker to help save the day. And that's how episode 7 finishes. And then the stage is then set for episode 8. Okay, right. So the opening crawl, that's how every Star Wars film begins. There's this opening crawl where a bit of backstory is given in yellow text, and it crawls away from the viewer into the distance against the backdrop of space. So this is the opening crawl. And in the cinema, how did that feel, seeing that? Well, I was trying to keep my expectations realistic when I sat down in the cinema to watch episode 8, The Last Jedi. I thought to myself, if I expect too much from this, then I might be disappointed. It's just a film. And ultimately, it is just a space fantasy. It seems silly to invest so much into it. But having said that, I was really looking forward to getting stuck into some new Star Wars, and I had no idea what was coming, and I couldn't help getting excited. I know it's stupid, isn't it? But I couldn't help getting excited, and kind of I felt strangely nervous sitting in the cinema as the film began. The Lucasfilm logo appeared, and I was just trying to stay calm, but I have to admit it was difficult. I felt weirdly nervous and sort of oddly emotional, I have to admit. Then the Star Wars logo appeared, ding, you know, on the screen, and the music. And I was already getting chilled, and to be honest, I started welling up at that point. I know it's a bit pathetic or something, isn't it? But there it is. Somehow, these films just take me directly back to my childhood. It's like stepping back in time and going straight back to my living room when I was 7 years old, and my dad was younger than I am now, and I'd never had any real experiences in my life. I'd never left home, never had my heart broken, never fallen in love. I was a bit emotional during this film. I just can't help it. So also bear in mind that I was watching this film while expecting my wife to give birth to our baby at any moment. So I literally had my phone in my hand, and every single vibration from my phone I expected was a text from my wife saying that her water had broken. So I was kind of already in a weird state. And so I was feeling quite emotionally susceptible while watching the film, which is fine. You know, I'm in touch with my feelings. There's nothing wrong with that, is there? So the opening crawl started, and it's impossible not to get excited by this if you're a Star Wars fan. For some reason, I can never really read the opening crawl and take it in. I'm normally just like, whoa, it's Star Wars, it's actually happening. So anyway, the opening crawl for episode 8, The Last Jedi, goes like this. It says, "The First Order reigns. Having decimated the peaceful Republic, Supreme Leader Snoke now deploys his merciless legions to seize military control of the galaxy. Only General Leia Organa's band of resistance fighters stand against the rising tyranny, certain that Jedi Master Luke Skywalker will return and restore a spark of hope to the fight. But the resistance has been exposed. As the First Order speeds towards the rebel base, the brave heroes mount a desperate escape." So basically, the First Order are now in complete control of the galaxy after having blown up the Republic. That's, I guess, just like the government, I suppose that's what it's never really explained. But anyway, the First Order blew up a bunch of planets, essentially wiping out the kind of the government of the galaxy, and then they've taken control. So it's like been a huge military coup on an epic scale, using this planet-sized battle station, which is like the Death Star 3, let's say. The Resistance blew up the Starkiller base spectacularly at the end of the film. But anyway, the First Order have essentially taken over control of the galaxy, and the Resistance are on the run. I imagine the First Order just want to get rid of them now, as they are the sort of last remnant of the Republic, or of, you know, anyone willing to put up a fight against them. So the Resistance are on the run, escaping from their base. The First Order are closing in with vastly superior weaponry, ships and stuff like that. There's a cool moment where you see the Resistance like evacuating their base on this planet. And they look up into the sky and you can see these like star destroyers coming out of hyperspace just into the sky. Imagine like looking up into the sky on Earth and seeing these ships like suddenly appearing way up in the distance. So that's a cool moment. I was like, whoa, that's an interesting thing. We've never seen that before. Like star destroyers appearing in the atmosphere or visible from the planet's surface, I think. Have we ever seen that? I don't know. Anyway, it was cool. So the First Order blow up the Rebel base with these massive cannons from outer space as the remaining Resistance ships escape. But the Resistance do manage to escape, but they're being pursued by the First Order fleet. And in an effective but costly counterattack led by Poe Dameron, Resistance fighters managed to destroy a First Order dreadnought. So, Poe Dameron, in this kind of brave X-Wing pilot, leads an attack against the First Order fleet, which is sort of just a few fighters going up against these massive ships. One of the First Order officers that we see is played by a British actor called Adrian Edmondson. And I'm sure that all the British people watching the film were sort of delighted at that point, because we all know Adrian Edmondson very well. He's been in lots of English comedy TV shows and stuff, so it was quite funny to see him on the screen. Admiral Hux, who is sort of in charge of the First Order, he's played by, is his name Domhnall Gleeson, the Irish actor? He's particularly good because he really hams it up. To ham it up is basically to essentially overact, like to perform in a very obvious way, especially in a way that makes people laugh. And I think it's associated with stage actors who kind of overact in a slightly comic way. So Domhnall Gleeson really hams it up as this First Order, Admiral. He's an Admiral. And he speaks in this very old-fashioned, posh English accent and everything. The first bit of controversial humour arrives with Poe Dameron facing off against this massive First Order dreadnought. And, you know, he has a little conversation with Hux and he's playing with him. And he says, you know, I'm holding for Admiral. He calls him Admiral Hugs, not Admiral Hux, and pretends that he's on hold and all this sort of stuff. That's controversial humour because a lot of people found that to be not funny and sort of out of place. I thought it was all right. I quite enjoyed making fun of the First Order because they are a ridiculous bunch of space Nazis, essentially. So it's quite amusing to make fun of them. And the First Order officers are actually pretty incompetent. And I think Domhnall Gleeson plays a lot of his scenes for laughs. It's a completely over-the-top performance. His old-fashioned received pronunciation accent and his general frothing at the mouth. It's like a sort of cliched Nazi officer or something. A quick note here about accents. English accents in Star Wars. In the Star Wars films, almost all of the Imperial officers and First Order officers have these old-fashioned, heightened, received pronunciation accents. This is because this is the accent that Americans associate with an evil old empire, because the British Empire was an evil old empire for the USA, especially when you think of like upper class British people, or admirals in the English Navy and so on. These were the evil old empire for the United States. And this association still exists, kind of more so in the 70s, but still today. So when George Lucas chose these actors with these kind of old-fashioned, posh English accents, I think the sort of almost subconscious association was that these guys represent an evil empire. And today it still means like stuffy formality and things like that. So that's all of the officers, the bad guy officers have this accent. Also, some of the other characters have this old-fashioned English accent too. Like Obi-Wan Kenobi also had an old-school English accent, but I think that was to suggest that he came from an era that no longer really exists, like the Old Republic. And it just fits the character too. His British accent, or his English accent, gives him class, dignity, and suggests that he's more than just a crazy old man. Also, Darth Vader had a bit of an RP British accent sometimes, but this gradually changed into a sort of transatlantic American accent, which is still old-fashioned and a bit formal in tone, but also a bit American. And that's just because the voice actor, James Earl Jones, was a classically trained American actor. These great actors that appeared in Star Wars really brought a lot of weight and class to the original films, and this was repeated in the prequel trilogy, and they chose more well-trained British actors in the prequels because they also have class and a certain sort of weight and distinction to them. And this includes actors like, for example, Terence Stamp, who was in the prequel trilogy. In this sequel trilogy, accents are also used to create certain feelings and associations with the characters. The First Order officers, as I've said, still speak in this old-fashioned RP in order to give that sense of old empire. And you can think also of the naval officers in Pirates of the Caribbean, the English naval officers who speak in a similarly old-fashioned way. Supreme Leader Snoke in the sequel trilogy speaks in formal British RP. We don't really know much about him, and I'll come back to that in a bit. But basically, he's a bit like the Emperor, probably very old and powerful, and he's the supreme leader of the First Order, so of course he has the old-fashioned English RP accent. And it's not just in Star Wars too. In many Hollywood films, powerful bad guys often have old-school English accents. Most of the other characters in Star Wars speak American English, though, and this seems to be the default accent for just any ordinary person in the Star Wars universe. This includes Han Solo, who is a kind of cowboy, smuggler, flyboy kind of guy, and Luke Skywalker, who's just a farmer from a desert planet. He's, you know, if you speak with that kind of accent, you're probably nobody particularly special. You're just an ordinary person. Also, most of the new characters speak with standard American accents too. Like, for example, Finn. He's just an ordinary guy, quite a low-level person, since he used to be a stormtrooper, and he speaks with an American accent, although the actor is actually from Peckham in South London. Apparently, he auditioned in his normal voice, his normal English accent, but it just didn't feel right. And he auditioned in an American accent, and apparently it just fit the character better. So sometimes that's all it means. It doesn't really mean that much. It's a question of just, you know, whether it feels right or not. And I think for the character of Finn, who is this sort of, you know, slightly heroic guy or an action guy, an ordinary bloke who ends up being a sort of an action hero, although he's got nothing really special about him, I think just an American accent probably fit that character better. Also, probably audiences would respond to that better too. You can imagine American audiences not really understanding why Finn would speak with a South London accent. Poe Dameron also has a standard American accent. As I said, these are just the sort of ordinary people, the rebels, the down-to-earth heroes that aren't part of this old-fashioned empire. Then, of course, there's Rey. And Rey speaks with quite a posh English accent, which is quite interesting. She's got quite a posh English accent, although she doesn't speak in the kind of formal way that the First Order officers speak. I mean, she doesn't use formal language, although she does have a slightly old-fashioned accent. I think she's just a normal person too. And according to this film, she is nobody special, unless this is just a trick. And in episode 9, they will reveal something special about Rey in terms of her lineage. But I don't think so. Again, I'll talk more about this later. So why does Rey have this English RP accent when all the other sort of ordinary characters speak with American accents? Well, I don't really know. Perhaps the actress doesn't really do a very good American accent, and this is just her normal voice. Maybe that's it. Perhaps they just wanted to arouse our interest in this character by giving her a distinctive and classy voice, a bit like Obi-Wan Kenobi had. The fans certainly took this point as a big clue about her origins. A lot of people believe that because she's Force-sensitive and she speaks in a posh English accent, that she must be related to other Force users with this accent, like maybe Obi-Wan Kenobi or perhaps even Emperor Palpatine. And there were lots of fan theories that she was maybe Obi-Wan Kenobi's daughter or granddaughter or Emperor Palpatine's daughter or something like that. There are other details that support these fan theories, but apparently her accent doesn't mean this at all. But still, it's interesting to note that although she grew up on an insignificant planet and lived as a scavenger for all of her life, she still speaks with quite a posh English accent when all the people around her on that home planet of Jakku don't have the same accent. Her slave owner, for example, because in The Force Awakens, she appears to be basically a slave, or at least someone who works for food rations rather than money. So her owner or her master or boss speaks with a working class Cockney English accent. So anyway, it's just interesting to note the way that accents are used in this film. And that was just a note on accents there. Next time you watch these films in English, you can listen out for the different accents and just think about those associations. Now then, back to the plot. I'm going to try and explain the plot as we go through this episode. It's fairly complicated. I mean, if you've seen the film, you know the plot anyway, so it doesn't really matter if I miss a few little details. So the Resistance avoid getting blown up by the First Order ships. These massive battleships called dreadnoughts. And Poe Dameron bravely and recklessly flies right up to the First Order dreadnought and does some sort of Top Gun style maverick flying, taking out lots of gun turrets and generally being a brilliant pilot. So by taking out those gun turrets, he clears the way for the Resistance bombers. And these bombers come in, and they're kind of like World War II style bombers. And Star Wars has always taken inspiration from World War II films. The original Episode 4 Star Wars film, actually, a lot of those flight sequences, you know, with the X-Wing fighters doing the trench run, a lot of those shots were actually directly lifted from World War II films. I think the Battle of Britain, for example, some of those dogfights and things are actually copied almost directly from World War II war films. So it's quite appropriate that the resistance bombers look a bit like World War II bombers. And they are laden with these cool looking round black bombs, which are kind of ready to be dropped on the First Order dreadnought. Now, some people say, but there's no gravity in space. How would these bombs work? But this is Star Wars, isn't it? It's not Star Trek. I make that distinction because Star Trek has always been based on science. You know, there's been a lot of science and, you know, like physics and different theories and things like that in Star Trek. But Star Wars is fantasy. It's not science fiction. So if your argument against this film is that it doesn't make scientific sense, then, well, sorry, that's a bit invalid considering Star Wars has never stood up to any scientific scrutiny. And ultimately, it's an emotional, character-driven fable set in space in a galaxy far, far away a long, long time ago. It's more like a Greek myth or an episode of Flash Gordon than 2001 A Space Odyssey. So this is not science fiction, this is fantasy in space. So there are some classic moments of Star Wars fighter combat in space, including a fat guy with a beard who dies instantly. And this is something that happens in so many Star Wars films, beginning with Episode 4, when a fat bearded pilot called Porkins dies in the attack on the Death Star. And it happens again in Episode 7, I think. There's another fat guy who dies. And then here we go again. Another fat bearded pilot buys the farm, meaning he dies, almost instantly. And it's a sort of running joke. And I wonder how the fat bearded guy community feels about this. And so, what else? So Poe Dameron is an awesome pilot, but an incredible risk taker, and he ends up getting most of the Resistance fleet destroyed, except for one lone bomber, which somehow manages to get through the First Order defences. And then there's this super dramatic sequence with this last remaining bomber. And this feels like the ending sequence of the film rather than the start. And I don't understand how anyone could not find this exciting and brilliant, this whole sequence, with this one bomber flying through all of this fighting and all these lasers going everywhere, and this bomber somehow is managing to survive, and it's got this load of bombs. And on this bomber, you see this character who, it turns out, is Rose's sister. She's a gunner on the bomber. And all the other crew on her bomber have been killed, and it's up to her to press the trigger button and drop all the bombs onto the dreadnought. And it's very dramatic stuff with her trying, you know, her dropping the trigger button, and then she falls down in her spaceship, and she's lying on her back on the bottom of the ship, and the button for the bombs is on a ledge way above her. And it's very dramatic because any minute now the ship's going to explode and she won't be able to release the bombs. And she needs to try and grab the button, but it's out of her reach. And there's a suggestion here that Princess Leia uses the Force to help her, that we cut to Leia on the bridge of her ship and she's kind of like looking into the distance. And you get the impression that maybe she's sort of somehow influencing the outcome of this battle using the Force or something. And also, Rose's sister holds onto a necklace, and we see later that the other half of this necklace belongs to her sister, Rose. She kind of, holds onto this necklace and closes her eyes, and of course the button somehow drops down from the ledge towards her, and it all happens in slow motion. The button, you think, is she going to catch the button? And then the button flies past her head, out of reach, and this moment is executed in a slightly cheesy and cliched way by Rian Johnson, the director. I think the button clearly drops past her and is out of reach, but then somehow in slow motion we see the button dropping from another angle, and her hand comes from nowhere to grab the button at the last moment. And it's exactly the same thing that happens in Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise, when he's in that high security room trying to steal some classified information or something. He's suspended from the ceiling in this room where if you touch the floor or even a drop of water touches the floor, it'll set the alarm off. And and a bead of sweat drops from his forehead, and we see it flying towards the floor, and we know that if it touches the floor, he's dead, basically. And that bead of sweat falls, and it's definitely going to land on the floor, but suddenly his hand comes in at the last minute and catches the bead of sweat at the last second. The magic of the movies. So some people probably found that a bit annoying, but it's just a trick that's been used in countless other films. And, you know, movies always play with time and space. They slow down time, they speed things up, they use different angles and all that sort of thing in order to raise the tension. And, you know, the worst that you can say about this sequence is that it's a bit of a cliche. But I found it personally to be good old-fashioned dramatic tension. And the moment when she presses the button and the bombs drop onto the dreadnought, that's really satisfying. And there's a huge explosion and the dreadnought is destroyed, although it's at great cost to the resistance, because basically their whole bombing fleet has been lost. So that was a really exciting sequence and a great way to begin the film. And I don't mind the jokey dialogue between Poe and Hux. I actually love the way that the First Order officers are quite ridiculous and over the top. And I always found that to be funny in Star Wars anyway. But there is a hell of a lot of war in this film. I mean, of course, it's Star Wars. The clue is in the title. It's about war in space. But there is a lot of war. And I remember James saying this in another episode that we did about Star Wars once. I remember him saying, will this war ever end? I mean, it's just relentless war that goes on and on forever. And, you know, it probably won't end. It's probably going to go on and on and on. And that's a pity. You know, it's a pity that this is all about war and that this is great entertainment, like war as entertainment. I think that's a bit of a pity. You see it a lot in other films too, like Avengers, Infinity War. It's just war, 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 explosions and explosions, never-ending war, and it's all for our entertainment. I think that's a bit weird. So, you know, that's one issue I do have with Star Wars. I have to say that this relentless war that never ends, and that's a bit depressing. Anyway, the Resistance fleet jumps into hyperspace and escapes the First Order for now. And Poe Dameron gets told off by Princess Leia, who demotes him. And basically Poe's character arc in this film is that he has to learn how to develop from a reckless, if brilliant, fighter pilot into a strategic and inspiring leader of the Resistance. And you kind of see that happen as the film progresses. One of the complaints about the film is that none of the characters develop and that there's no character changes. Well, I'd completely disagree with that. Most of the characters have clear character arcs, like, for example, Poe Dameron changing from a reckless fighter pilot to a more sort of strategic and inspirational leader by the end of the film. So also, Admiral Hux gets told off by Supreme Leader Snoke, who appears as a hologram and throws him around the room and drags him across the floor using the Force. Then I think Hux is summoned into Snoke's throne room along with Kylo Ren. And Snoke is really pissed off with Hux and everything, but Hux reveals that they're actually tracking the resistance through hyperspace, something that wasn't possible before, hyperspace tracking. Again, some fans are pissed off about this. They're like, oh, what's hyperspace tracking? You know, you could never do that before. Well, that is a new thing that seems to have come from nowhere, but this was mentioned very quickly in Rogue One. There is a mention of hyperspace tracking in Rogue One. So there it is. It is in the... It is mentioned in other films before, so it's not completely out of the blue that hyperspace tracking is something that the First Order have been working on for years. Anyway, so Hux reveals that they're able to track the resistance through hyperspace, and this kind of gets him off the hook with Snoke. But then Hux leaves Snoke alone with Kylo Ren, who is still wearing his mask from Episode 7. Okay, and this is a pretty cool scene. I think any scene with Snoke and Kylo Ren is a cool scene. And Snoke bullies Kylo Ren, explaining how he's disappointed with him, how he's lost faith in him, how Kylo is still conflicted between the light and the dark sides of the Force, despite having killed Han Solo, his father. And Snoke says that when he found Kylo Ren, he thought he had so much potential in raw power and that he could be the new Darth Vader, but now he realizes he's just a boy in a mask who got beaten by a girl. And to be fair to Kylo, when he failed to defeat Rey in Episode 7, he had been shot in the side by Chewbacca. He had been shot when he took on Rey, but still. Snoke really makes him feel small and useless. And Snoke is obviously manipulating him, but in a very, very cruel way. And he kind of slaps down Kylo Ren. In fact, he gives him a jolt of Force lightning, which is a pretty cool moment. He kind of bounces some Force lightning off the floor and it strikes Kylo Ren. And Kylo stands up defiantly just before Snoke shocks him with electricity. He kind of stands up defiantly because of the things that Snoke is saying to him. He stands up, but Snoke shocks him quickly, sending him flying backwards. And I suppose that's to teach him a lesson, like a kind of cruel parent or something. But and when this happens, we see Snoke's power used casually. And also his guards, there are these red guards in the throne room. They quickly adopt fighting positions when Kylo stands up. And then they return to their original positions after a couple of seconds. And these guards look brilliant. They look sort of badass and cool. And definitely better than the Imperial guards that didn't really protect Emperor Palpatine in the original films. So the way the guards move into their fighting positions, it's like, whoa, that's cool. These guards look amazing. Also, Snoke looks amazing. The CGI, the computer-generated images and special effects and the motion capture that they've used with Snoke is amazing. He looks really good. And so after this scene, Kylo Ren feels utterly humiliated and furious. And Adam Driver's performance is really good, I think. I think it's quite understated, except for the moments when he flies into a rage. We don't quite know what's going on inside him, except for the subtle looks that he gives and subtle changes in his expression, which suggests that he's either feeling hurt or angry or determined or impatient or calculating. Kylo Ren is a bit of an enigma. I think he never blinks in the film. It's just this kind of cold expression on his face. Unblinking. He never really reveals what he's thinking either. And I actually feel sympathy towards him at this point, considering how Snoke has been bullying him, how Snoke builds him up and knocks him down and stuff. And I actually think that Kylo is a bit more interesting than just a guy in a mask. Darth Vader, of course, from the original trilogy, is a brilliant villain, but he's also quite ridiculous. I mean, that helmet that Vader wears is a bit over the top. I mean, it works, because we wonder what's going on the inside. We speculate about the man on the inside behind this grotesque helmet. But Kylo Ren removes his mask, and I think this is a good idea in terms of the filmmaking. It allows us to see Adam Driver's performance. And I like the way that Adam Driver is mostly quite blank in his expression. It's hard to read him. And then at certain key moments, we actually see the conflict inside him when that blank expression breaks and we see, as I said, rage or him being calculating or something like that. I like the fact that we never really know which way he's going. Is Kylo turning good or is he turning bad? Or is it possible that he's going to go in a completely new direction against the Resistance and Luke Skywalker, but also against Snoke, who's using and abusing him? So Kylo is upset and very angry. And not only does he remove the mask, but he destroys it against the wall of the lift. He smashes it to pieces. So this guy is calm and expressionless 1 minute and then completely unhinged the next minute. And I really love that about this character. He orders his ship to be made ready. The Resistance at this point are just licking their wounds after the bomber run on the Dreadnought. And Poe Dameron is feeling gutted that he's been demoted by General Leia. Then we see Finn, and Finn has been in a coma after he kind of got slashed by Kylo Ren at the end of episode 7. And Finn wakes up inside this kind of back to tank thing. He's wearing some kind of medical bodysuit that he's been wearing while recovering. And there's a bit of comedy when he falls out of he falls off the hospital bed, and he then walks out of the medical ward wearing this ridiculous suit with pipes sticking out of it and liquid going everywhere. And it looks pretty dumb, but it doesn't really do any harm to the film or to Finn, really. It's just a kind of slightly goofy moment. And Poe sees Finn wandering around, kind of waking up from, I guess, this coma. And he goes up to him and he kind of explains what's been going on. He fills him in on the plot. I think at this point, the First Order ships suddenly jump out of hyperspace right behind the Resistance. And the Resistance are shocked to discover that the First Order have somehow tracked them through hyperspace. So the thing is, right, that the Resistance are a certain distance ahead of the First Order ships, just out of range of the First Order's big weapons. Now, I admit that this part of the plot is quite contrived. We now have a sort of standoff or a low-speed chase in which the First Order can't get any closer to the Resistance because their big ships aren't quite fast enough, and the Resistance ships are relying on their shields and their mobility to keep out of range of the First Order's guns. So we end up with this kind of race against time as the Resistance are trying to escape while, you know, maintaining their position just out of range of the big guns. Now, I don't know why the First Order can't just do a really quick hyperspace jump so that they're immediately behind the Resistance ships and then use their big weapons to destroy them. I don't really understand why the First Order ships aren't faster than they are and why their big weapons have such a short range. But honestly, I don't really care. It doesn't really matter that much to me. I'm willing to suspend my disbelief in order to enjoy the film. And you know, my enjoyment of this film is not predicated on all of these little details being exactly right. I don't mind. And the situation is basically that the First Order decide to play the long game. They're convinced that eventually the Resistance will run out of fuel and then their shields will fail and that the ships will then fall within range and the First Order will just be able to easily destroy them. They also know that the Resistance can't escape through hyperspeed. So basically they wait, and that's good enough for me. It shows the arrogance and cruelty of the First Order, enjoying the feeling that they have the upper hand, and perhaps even relishing the dominance of their position. And in terms of the film, it allows other things to happen in the meantime, and it works as a kind of ticking clock device, which is really common in many films. There's always a ticking clock or an ultimatum, which gives a sense of urgency to everything that happens. There's a time limit, you know. And the protagonists have to hurry because they're running out of time. It's just a device that's used in lots and lots of films. And the worst thing you could say about it is that it's a bit of a cliche. So Kylo Ren then goes out on an attack run against the Resistance with a few other First Order fighters. So he sends out, you know, they send out a few smaller fighters to go out and do some strategic attacks on the Resistance fleet. And this is the first time that we've seen Kylo in his TIE fighter. And it's a bit like Vader's TIE fighter from the original trilogy. Or perhaps it's sort of reminiscent of the fighter that was flown by Anakin Skywalker in one of the prequel films. Kylo Ren also does some spinning in his in his, what is it? It's a Thai silencer. I think that's what it's called. He does some spinning, which is a move that Anakin was known for doing in the prequels. And that's kind of a nice touch since Kylo is Anakin's grandson. And there are sort of parallels between the characters. And Kylo destroys a lot of the Resistance X-Wing fighters in the hangar on their ship, the Radus, and loads of Resistance pilots die. And Kylo is a badass pilot. He flies past the bridge of the Radus where his mother, Leia, is situated. And there's this cool moment when the two of them obviously become aware of each other through the Force. And Kylo is planning to blow up the bridge, killing everyone, including his mother. But he pauses and seems to be wrestling with inner conflict. And we see Leia perhaps reaching out using the Force. And this is a great emotional moment that, and a really good performance by both Adam Driver and Carrie Fisher. There's a lot of emotion shown on their faces. Kylo, in the end, doesn't shoot his missiles into the bridge. He can't kill his mother, apparently. Maybe Leia is using the Force to control his mind or something, or perhaps Kylo hasn't become completely dark yet and the light part of him has mercy on her. It's interesting anyway to see his conflict and to consider where his loyalties really lie. Do they lie with Snoke or do they lie with Leia somehow? We don't really know, but he doesn't launch his missiles in any case. However, the two TIE fighters by his side do shoot their missiles and the bridge is blown up, sending everyone that's on the bridge hurtling out into space, including General Leia. Kylo Ren is then told to return to the First Order fleet, and he seems frustrated, perhaps because his mother has just been blown up, or because he resents being given orders by General Hux. At this moment, I feel like he's going to turn back to the light side, or at least he's not completely loyal to Snoke and the First Order. He seems to resent having to follow orders. And this conflict is really interesting, and I don't see why some people don't see this as a really positive point about the film. Trying to work out Kylo Ren and the direction he's taking, I think, is fascinating, and it's helped by a really good performance by Adam Driver. I reckon the best things about this film are the inner conflicts in the main characters. There's depth, there's contradiction, there's failure, confusion, pain and redemption in some cases in these characters. And the film shows this to the audience rather than just kind of explaining it in clumsy dialogue like you get in the prequel films. Kylo Ren flies back to the First Order fleet, and then perhaps the most controversial and weird moment in this film happens. And this is the one that a lot of people really don't like. And you know what? This is where I'm going to end this part of this Star Wars episode, and I'll carry on in the next one. So actually, this is going to be three episodes, isn't it? This one, the continuation in the next one, and then there'll be the conversation with Dad and James in the third one. So three episodes all about Star Wars The Last Jedi. You're definitely getting your money's worth on this one, aren't you? And considering it's a free podcast, that means quite a lot, I suppose. All right, then. Good. So I expect that part two of this will be available almost straight away, so you can just carry on then, can't you? Yes, you can. Okay, good. Thanks for listening up to this point. Let me know your thoughts on what I've said in the comments section, and I'll speak to you in the next part. Okay? All right, then. For now, then. Goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.